Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
By the way, we fall short. How about our imaging guy, Chris, sometimes falls short? They don't all work, Chris.
Okay, so there's many things I have to discuss with you.
Yes.
As we get into the show. But this show is loaded. Yep. We're glad you're here. As we mentioned in the lookie, Booger McFarland's coming on today. Peter Guber is coming on today. Really excited to talk to Peter, the part owner of the Warriors, part owner of the Dodgers, part owner of LAFC.
Movie producer, Academy Award nominee, all kinds of stuff.
Extraordinarily successful guy. 50 yep. Academy Award nominations for all the movies he's been involved with. He's going to join us in half an hour. So we'll talk to Peter Guber. But so I was on the morning show this morning, Mace, and they were talking about, I was kind of falling on the grenade because I lost to Travis. We're setting up when I'm going to come in
sure.
and replace Travis. So Travis said, well, when we play next time, I'll give you strokes. And I said, no, I've got a better idea.
Yep.
I said, in honor of the Mickelson Tiger Manning Brady match.
Teams.
So the problem is there aren't very many on-air hosts at the station who play golf. So we've got to do it in one of two ways.
Okay.
Either we got to get somebody. You've shown an interest in learning golf.
I have.
And the way it would be best ball. So we wouldn't have to use very many of your shots on the front nine.
Right.
But let's say you and I are partners. If you happen to have a really good hole, we use it. And if not, we don't. But on the back nine, it would probably be alternate shot. In other words, I tee off, you hit my shot, then I hit your shot, and all the way into the hole.
Oh. Well, why don't we get another total hack?
But here's the thing. That's what we do. Here's the question. For our teammates, like, because Travis and I like golfing. For our teammates, should we get hacks, like maybe you and Key, or you and LZ, or Sedano, or Travis said, I want Tommy Lamb on my team, and if he takes Tommy, then I would take Chris. I would take Morales. And I think Morales and I could beat Travis and Tommy.
Well, Morales, that's all he does is play golf.
Right. But here's the question. The audience, you know, doesn't know Chris and Tommy very well.
Correct.
Would we be better going with hacks, guys like you and Key, who would be terrible at golf, or go with guys who are good at golf but aren't as big of names? What do you think?
You know what I say? Go hacks! I'm all about hacks!
So that's one of the things we need to figure out. Now, the other thing that I have news for you about is you predicted it, but you're not going to be happy about it.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about? You predicted it, but you will not be happy about it.
Oh, that you got the most viewers to the Kamenetsky thing.
I shattered your number.
Yeah.
Just absolutely destroyed. We had a lot of technical problems, but we...
Yeah, because I tuned in and you were already gone.
I left at 10:30. I was on from 10 to 10:30. We couldn't get the screens to sync up right. Like, so you saw like my... Reagan, my dog, was the star of my particular screen for most of it. But people were curious...
Were you in the jacuzzi?
Yes. That's what we gave up. We gave up production value to get actual live jacuzzi. I made one critical mistake. About 9 minutes in, I took my headphones out and went under the water and came back up.
Yeah.
But then I had a bunch of water in my ears and I was using iPad headphones.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I couldn't hear all the time. But we got through it. It got record numbers.
And it broke the record.
Shattered it.
Now I've got to go back on.
That's exactly the spirit in which I hoped you would take this.
I need a friggin' gimmick.
You need a bit. Exactly. So what do you got?
Well, I mean, I've got a jacuzzi, but that's been done.
I have an idea, but again, I don't think you'll like it.
Oh, God.
You might have to do it off camera and then slide back in camera.
No.
Get stoned while you're on the show.
Are you serious? You really
think
so?
I would never do it, but I don't think you have I don't think you have a problem with it.
No, I have absolutely no problem with it. It is, it's internet only. I don't think I'm controlled.
It's 10 o'clock at night.
I own my own rights.
I think that would shatter my record. Would it not?
I think it would.
Now, are there any We work for Disney. Are yep. there any potential landmines that we're not thinking? Lindsay, what do you think of this idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think that
could as a result of it, could either one of us or both of us be fired?
I don't know. I think we could ask. I mean, maybe we could do like a play on words.
Well,
so
if we
like,
ask, they'll say no. It's always better to do it and apologize rather than ask.
Right, but there's no way to know the ramifications if we just if we don't ask.
And now that we put it out there, Amanda may issue an edict.
I think we should do it and imply, but don't necessarily say. And if you're not shown on camera, you know.
That's a good idea.
Our motto for that show would be, you would just see the smoke. You would not see the act. You would see the smoke. Like on the
yes.
All the Smoke podcast.
It's like the All the Smoke podcast. That's right. Actually been used, right? That's the Matt Barnes podcast.
That is the Matt Barnes, Steven Jackson podcast. They are both unapologetic marijuana users.
So it is the All the Smoke version of the Kamenetsky Brothers late night show.
I think that, if I'm being honest, Mace, I'm a handicapper at heart. I handicap everything.
Yep.
If you promised to do that and followed through, I would make you the favorite to beat my record. Because I don't think there's anybody else at the station who could come up with anything creative enough other than do the show live from a jacuzzi or do the show while you're actually getting stoned. Sedano's not going to come up with something better than that. Key can't be bothered by it. LZ won't even be up. So it's up to you to break my record or I'm going down as the champ.
Damn.
And how much longer do you think they'll be doing that show?
I think that's a permanent show. They're getting, like, legit. Like, I was watching last night. You had, at times, you had, like, 1,500 to 2,000 people watching.
Yes. Brian sent me a note today, and he said, as it turns out, half nudity and a dog equals big ratings.
I just texted Brian and Andy and said, I'll do your show stoned.
No, while
Here, if you guys, if
the
you
key
guys
is
the
I'll
numbers.
Do your show while I'm getting stoned. You know, you have to actually, I mean, if you just do the
but
show.
But I'm an edibles guy.
But people, well, just other than take the edibles on the air.
Yeah.
And describe what's in them.
Just say you're eating a special brownie.
No. You don't even have to do that. I think the whole discussion should be on the show.
I'm eating
here's
a
what
delicious
it is.
Chocolate
here's why
covered
I like,
berry.
Here's why I like this particular chocolate berry. Here's the difference between this one and maybe another one other people would use. I think the whole thing works.
I'm feeling so indica tonight. Right. Probably for them, I should sativa myself.
What's the difference between indica and sativa?
An indica calms you down. That's like the one you take when you...
See, that'd be bad for me.
One with the couch. You want to go to bed. Yeah. You want to do nothing. Sativa's the one that makes you bounce around in your head like...
Oh,
bing,
so maybe,
bing,
the,
bing.
Maybe no. Maybe the indica is good for me. That, I'm bouncing around naturally.
Oh, an indica would be the best for you. I okay. still say I would at some point like to get stoned with you.
Okay, could we? Do you know, does the technology support four people on the screen at once?
Yes, you can do that.
Because sure. last night we had trouble getting three.
I think they could
well,
do
Well, I think it was, yeah, you definitely can. You could do probably like eight.
When Brian and I tried to troubleshoot it today, we were emailing back and forth. We're not exactly sure why we couldn't get me centered in the jacuzzi. We just never could figure it out. But
what
it didn't
about,
hurt
okay,
age.
What about this? What about this? What if I get myself feeling really, really good?
But you have, mates, as you taught me, you have to do that on the air.
That's where I think we get into trouble. What if I demonstrate how good I feel by eating donuts the entire show?
I think you have to
see
both.
How many donuts you, I can eat.
You start with an edible. And then you go to the box of donuts.
Yeah, how about that? Because I've eaten as many as 13 donuts in 5 minutes. God, can you believe that? I ate 13 donuts in 5 minutes?
Yeah, I saw it. I was there.
Oh, that was so friggin' disgusting. Yeah. I'm up for whatever it takes to beat your record. Okay. Whatever it takes to beat your record.
And that show could be on for another year. It could go away in a week. We don't know.
There are only two places in every race. This is what my dad taught me. There's first and there's last. And right now I am in last place. Damn.
Correct. So you got to come up with something quick.
All right. So Peter Gruber coming up for you. A very classy man on a show that started out in a very unclassy way. And a little bit later on, Booger McFarland. As John said, we've got a Goober and a Booger today on the show. And a lot floating around now about a possible structure for the NBA when it returns.
Well, to that I would say, which one? Because I keep hearing more like different theories every day. Are you talking about the Mark Cuban theory? Are you talking about the World Cup theory? Are you talking about what Ramona was kicking around today? Which ones are you leaning towards?
The one I really like is the World Cup format. And I know it's probably the one that's least likely to happen.
Yeah.
But I think it is fantastic.
Well, explain,
and by the way, Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer is going to be on at 4:30. He did a really, really good explanation of it. But the idea is that you would go to pool play, and so there would be a group stage like you have in the World Cup or in the Olympics, each group would have two winners. So the Lakers, for example, would be in a group. The way this is laid out in tiers, it'd be Lakers, Miami, Houston, Orlando, and New Orleans. The Lakers would then play each of those teams twice, and the top two teams in the group would advance to seven-game series. So that would mean the Lakers play Miami twice, Houston twice, Orlando twice, and New Orleans twice. You get Zion versus the Lakers twice in that world. And then the two teams with the best record, and let's say the Lakers 4-2-8, let's say they go 7-1. 7-1, they advance. Whoever has the next best record in the group also advances. So maybe that's Houston that advances out of the group. The other groups are interesting. The Clippers would be in a group with the Milwaukee, the Lakers, Toronto, and the Clippers would all be in their individual groups and would all have a chance to advance.
Right.
This gives you two games between the Lakers and New Orleans. Two games between the Lakers and Westbrook and Harden and the Rockets. To me, that's pretty sexy that you get all the teams in. You get, for example, Sacramento in, you get the Spurs in, you get New Orleans in, and you get Portland in. So you go to 20 teams, and the Lakers are in a group with Miami, Houston, Orlando, and New Orleans. What do you think?
I think it's a fascinating idea. I heard Ramona on Sedano's show today say she thinks, this is just Ramona's opinion,
yeah,
that it's too radical a move for the NBA to consider seriously, that it's just too big of a change from a traditional champion, and she doesn't think she'll do it. But I'll tell you what, Adam Silver is the type of commissioner, and this has been, I think, the cornerstone of his commissionership. He never rejects ideas out of hand. I've never heard Adam say about any idea, we would never consider that or it's completely stupid. He'll say, well, here's why we might want to entertain it and here's why we wouldn't really want to do it. But he's acceptable. He's not one of these guys that rules with an iron fist. He's collaborative.
Right.
So if you brought him an idea like this, I think he would say, okay, let's talk about it. So
now, it means more basketball. It means there would be more games because there would be 40 games in pool play.
Right. So while I don't think it's likely, let's pretend that Adam puts you and I in charge of making this thing happen and selling it to the other owners. And let's do that when we come back next.
Okay. And we'll also take some calls on this. I think it's a fascinating idea. We'll also get into the Cuban plan, which is fascinating, the 1 through 16. There are lots of different structures now. 877-710-ESPN. That's 877-710-ESPN. And again, at 3:30, Peter Gruber, who is part owner of the Golden State Warriors, part owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers, movie producer, unbelievable career, he will join us at 3:30. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Hey, what's going on? It is Wednesday. It's a big Wednesday. A lot is going on. In fact, we're talking about the potential structure of the NBA when it comes back. And there's this World Cup idea that is floating around right now, which I like a lot. There's also the Mark Cuban plan, which is interesting. Mark Cuban, if I'm not mistaken, wants to go 1 through 16. Isn't that right, John?
I can't remember if he wants to go 1 through 16, but I know what Mark, the heart of his proposal is all 30 teams, five-game regular season, and then 20 of the 30 make the playoffs. That's the Cuban proposal. Ramona was on with Sedano today, and Ramona thinks, again, it's just her opinion, she's not reporting it, so don't aggregate this and put it out as like Ramona's reporting. She's not. It's just her opinion after talking to a lot of people. Ramona thinks it's going to be a three-component deal. In other words, that you have a small end of the season,
right?
Handful of games, then you have a play-in tournament, and then you have a regular playoff season. Now, what we were talking about before the break is, I think, the most interesting idea. It's probably the least likely to happen. Was it first put out there by Kevin O'Connor? Is he the one who came up with the World Cup theory?
Kevin O'Connor is the World Cup guy. He detailed the World Cup potential. And he's coming on at 4:30.
Okay, good. But so you explained it well. It, like, picture what the World Cup is. The goal is to come out of your group. So what I like about it, Mace, and again, we're not reporting this, all right? We're talking about it as an idea.
It's an idea.
Right? What I like about it is it heightens the importance of every game.
Yes.
So think about it. If the Clippers open the playoffs against Dallas, and Dallas upsets the Clippers and beats them, that's a huge loss for the Clippers in a World Cup-type format. That puts them one loss away from being out.
Yep.
I think it would intensify. Like, wouldn't you watch, I mean, you and I'd probably watch every game anyway, but wouldn't you and I watch every playoff game, regardless whether
Absolutely.
Or not the Lakers were in it, if
Absolutely.
Under those circumstances?
Well, this year is going to be different in that I think, I'll watch all the Laker games and some of the other games. This year, I'll watch all the games no matter what. But in this scenario, when every single game matters,
let me take that statement you just made to a test. I know you pretty well.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think you're gonna watch a game between Brooklyn or in Orlando in a regular playoff
Correct.
Format.
Would not.
In this format, in a World Cup format, I think you would. I think we would bet mythical money on every game. It would affect other games. Like, keep, you know, say for example, Milwaukee is in that bracket and Milwaukee got upset and got one loss. Now all of a sudden the Brooklyn Orlando game means something. You know, it's. I think it would be really, really fun. Now it's let's try and, you know, whenever you're putting something out there, you want to try and figure out where the landmines are. You want to try and figure out, okay, so where
Sure.
would somebody attack our plan? If you're an elite team,
Yep.
if you're Milwaukee, you have fought all year to have a number one seed. You already, by nature of the pandemic, lost your home court advantage. So that is gone. Now you're going to make it even harder for the number one seed. If the number one seed loses two games, it's out. Is that fair? Is it fair
Well,
to a team like the Lakers or the Bucks that worked hard all year when they're expecting a seven-game series where they could take three losses?
And instead they get an eight-game series.
Yeah, but they could take three losses and still advance. Under what we're proposing, two losses and they're out.
Well, not necessarily.
Probably.
You're assuming that 6-2 is the next best record? I can see 5-3 as being the second best record in a group.
Maybe. I think, you know what? I think it'd just be really fun to watch.
Oh, it'd be really fun. And then you would get, Dame Lillard in the tournament. He'd be in the same group as Milwaukee. You would get Zion Williamson in the tournament, same group as the Lakers. You'd get the Spurs, same group as the Raptors. You'd get my Sacramento Kings, my
right?
backup team.
So, Mace, think about the regular World Cup, okay? what happens is we all watch the United States games, but then we get caught up in it and we watch all the other games. We watch the game between Bolivia and Korea.
Yeah.
For no reason. We don't know any of the players. We just do it because of the stakes, because it's the World Cup. The stakes would be extraordinary here. And I think Adam Silver's the type of guy who would say, I'd love to do this. I just don't know if Ramona was saying today, it was her opinion, she doesn't think he can sell that much change, that
right.
radical of a change. But you and Brian, I, you know, we're thinking, hey, let's go for it. You know, why not?
Brian Windhorst on his podcast, the Hoops Collective podcast yesterday, talked about this sort of round robin group play World Cup style approach to the return of the NBA.
One of the things that has been mentioned to me is a European basketball style or international basketball style group phase where the teams are put into groups and they all play each other in a round robin format. And they advance out of that group phase, just like you see in the Olympics every 4 years. You know, Team USA plays Angola and Turkey and Lithuania, and, you know, two teams from each of those groups advance. That could happen.
That could happen, he says.
Right. Again, unlikely, but I would completely welcome it. I think it would be really, really fun. Now, what Ramona's suggesting, though, could be fun, like a play-in tournament. You get Zion and Dame and those guys that are just on the outskirts. Now, Doris Burke and Funch, I'm teeing up Doris Burke here. She feels strongly that they should stick with just the 16 playoff teams, and she's got a pretty good argument as to why. Here's Doris.
From the moment talk of restarting this season began to up until yesterday, my thought has been, if the standard of safety is the first and primary thing, then it should be the 16 teams that have earned their way through 75 to 80% of games played. I don't believe under any circumstance that we should be exposing more people than is necessary to this virus. The virus is not done with us yet. So I don't even like the idea. And listen, I say that knowing I had a conversation with Steph Curry, and very casually he said to me, I am trying to wrap my mind around the idea that I may not play NBA until late 2020 or perhaps 2021. So the idea of not seeing Steph, of not seeing Damian, not seeing Trae Young. Yes, it's difficult for all of us, but let's keep the main thing the main thing. Let's establish a standard of safety, acknowledging some inherent risk, and let's get some resolution to the season.
What do you think?
So she's saying involve less teams because the fewer the teams, the fewer the players involved, the less risk there is.
And remember, she had COVID.
She did. You're right. She did have COVID. I understand her point, but I also acknowledge, and I think we all have to acknowledge, that there is going to be risk involved in any of these scenarios. There is just going to be the potential that somebody will test positive for COVID. And in the case of baseball, and I don't know what the NBA is going to do about it, but in the case of baseball, they are going to simply quarantine that player and test everybody else. So for me, because there is risk either way, I am in favor of more teams being involved. I'm in favor of teams like New Orleans with Zion Williamson, teams like Portland with Damian Lillard having a shot at playing. But I do acknowledge that there is risk and conceivably more risk with more teams or more players.
So you're kind of you're a hybrid between the World Cup idea and the Mark Cuban idea. Because Mark has every team playing. Does the World Cup, does Kevin O'Connor have every team playing?
He's got 20 teams playing.
20 out of 30.
And that's what Cuban has. Cuban's got 20 out of 30.
Cuban has 20 out of, this is an important distinction. Cuban has all 30 playing initially, so you can get the regional TV contracts.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And then he has you 20 teams going to the playoffs instead of 16.
Right.
Let me say, Mace, let me say this. All these ideas we're talking about, I don't think any of them are terrible ideas.
No,
I really don't. I think that all, and what is a byproduct of having Adam Silver as your commissioner is that he's open to different viewpoints and different opinions. There's a Board of Governors call on Friday. I think they're going to put all these things out for everybody, and they're going to come to a consensus. But I could, you and I both love debating each other on whatever the subject is.
Yes.
I could, if we were doing these three proposals, the World Cup proposal, the Cuban proposal, and I'll call it the Ramona proposal, the three-tiered proposal, and you told me we were going into a debate final, I would be comfortable taking any of the three and trying to win the debate. I think you can sell all three of these, and it may be something outside of the three things we're talking about.
Right, right.
One of the things I'm really excited to talk to Peter Guber about is that, and he's coming up, as Lindsay would not say, at the bottom of the hour. In about 5 minutes. Peter's whole career, Mace, has been live entertainment's not the right word.
The entertainment business.
Audience-based entertainment.
Yes.
Everything he's been involved in requires somebody spending money and coming to a venue and participating as an audience.
Yep.
That is gone right now. But it's going to come back, and it's guys like Peter who are going to be in meetings all day, every day, trying to bring it back. And that, you know, is going to be part of the variable. So there's a whole bunch of things that we don't know that we're going to know 3-4 months from now, and that changes the whole ballgame.
Yep. So that is coming up next for you. Peter Guber, who is part owner of the Dodgers, part owner of the Warriors. He is a prolific filmmaker. That's coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, it is a big Wednesday as we approach what could be the start of an NBA season. We believe it is coming. We believe that there's a Major League Baseball season coming soon, with spring training as soon as June. And that makes this guy a very timely guest, because he is part owner of the Golden State Warriors. He is part owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers. He is the executive producer of The Last Dance, which is the Super Bowl of documentaries. He's produced countless movies. Joining us right now is Peter Guber. Peter, thanks very much for coming on. How are you, man?
My pleasure. I'm home hostage.
We all are, Peter, and we appreciate you doing this. You know, I was looking back at your career. I just said before the break that really the one thing that runs through your career is that you have been driven by audience-related events, whether it be movies or sports or television in front of live audience. You need people in seats to make all these things happen to the degree of success you have had. How do we get that back? How do we even begin to get audiences back into these venues?
Well, you know, speaking not with any authority from any of the three leagues that I'm ownership in, and speaking not from my movie background and television background, I think we have to get aim for their hearts. You know, butts and seats are really important, but we have to aim for their hearts, wherever their hearts are, whether they're in a seat or they're standing, or whether they're on their iPhone or iPad or a large screen at home or a movie theater or a giant stadium or whatever it is. We have to aim for their hearts, and I think their hearts are all in having experiences. We're in the experience business, and so if we have a problem with, you know, where we have to play, or we have a problem of where we have to make the film, or if we have a problem of assembling large crowds, we have to deal with those problems, effectively. We have to work around all those issues and still try to aim for that, try to render an experience to these audiences. That's not to say that butts and seats aren't vitally important. They absolutely are for all sports and for all attraction businesses. And, you know, being on the governor's task force, I keep reinforcing to them that the mere fact that you can get it at home isn't the same as seeing it live. Because a live person watching a live event, whichever those sporting events are, is not a passenger. They're a participant. They believe they make a difference in the outcome of the game. It's a modern-day campfire. And we have 30,000 years of that modern-day campfire, from the flickering images around that campfire today to the big screens, arenas, and stadiums. We're not going to give that up. We may have an interregnum, we may have an interruption, but I don't believe we're going to give it up. It's going to be part of the panoply of creative entertainment activities that are going to be with us for a long time.
So we want to talk to you about sports. We want to talk to you about Last Dance, all kinds of stuff.
Whatever.
I am a former movie theater owner. I don't own movie theaters anymore, but I did for many, many years. And you have produced movies that have been nominated for 50 Academy Awards over the years. What is the future, do you think, of the movie theater business?
Well, you know, the idea of a communal experience, the idea of watching something together with other people, laughing and sharing and crying, and seeing that there's the collective group in that theater of very different age, sex, gender, background, economic background, and yet they all are combining themselves in an experience. And when you see that, there's something very important for society to really create a cohesive society, to see that they can laugh and cheer and cry and get scared about the same things. Very important. You can't do it in a disintermediated environment of the internet or an iPhone. You really don't get that feeling. So there's something very valuable for society and for entertainment businesses. So I really think that, you know, I used to run the largest movie circuit in the world, the second largest, the Lowe's Theaters. Yep. And I made many, many films for theaters, and they play beautifully. Today, the theater business has been cannibalized in many of the films by the internet and by the delivery systems, packaged media, so people can see it and enjoy it and see it where they want. But the movie theater experience, I don't think will die. I think it will morph. I think will be a specific set of kinds of films that'll be in there. But there'll always be hits. There will always be those films that people want to go to see in a large screen with other people. Now, how the movie theater business will morph to survive itself, going from 30,000 screens to certainly much less, is the same kind of problem that arenas and stadiums are going to face with their fans and their crowds. So we have a changing environment. We have to change with it. I do think movie theaters the screens will diminish. The movies that go into them will still be ones that are very large, crowd-oriented, high-velocity, expensive, panoramic type of films. But the theater experience will have to be great. It'll have to be better. Better seating, better food, better parking. Because the idea of the disruption by technology is so great. But I still think it can adapt, it can evolve. And I still love seeing my films and other people's films in theaters. Right now I can't do it, but I look forward to seeing it. I think it will diminish in volume, but not diminish in terms of significant films and a support for it.
Peter Guber is our guest, a very successful entertainment executive, and when you look at his sports resume, we mentioned part owner of the Dodgers, part owner of the Warriors, part owner of LAFC. So, Peter, this question may be asking you, like, to pick between your kids, but I'll ask you this. Do you find that you're more passionate about baseball, basketball, or soccer, or are they all different?
Well, it depends on how you define yourself. I mean, that's the person that's at the center where you're asking me that question. I define myself a little differently. I'd look at what is the connective tissue between all those things? Experiences. I render experiences to an audience. I'm a connector in that food chain between the artists, the ball players, the basketball players, the football players, the esports players, all of those folks, and the audiences, all of us. I'm a connector between them. So I find ways to take their narratives, their stories, and produce them, create them, fundamentally underwrite them, provide the arena or venue for them, for those audiences. So I'm really in the business of aiming for their hearts. I mean, I don't aim for their wallets. I'm saying, what kind of an experience will this audience want? And how can I make it better? How can I remove a lot of the friction that aren't really benefits, they're burdens in some sense to the experience, whether it's movie theaters or stadiums or arenas. And so you have to make a good film. You have to have a competitive team. You have to have colorful lead characters in movies and television. You have to have colorful characters in your sports team. I mean, that's what we relate to. We relate to people and their activities. So for me, what do I like? I like the variation of it. I like the fact that I could just finish this documentary we worked on 2 years, or the television shows I've done, or the movies, or the concerts. I like that variation. I'm fortunate enough in the more than 50 years I've been doing the business to do it all pretty well. So I've got the opportunity to continue to do it and intend to do it and succeed with it. And that's the intention you have, is you want to connect those two people. And they are both changing. The artists are changing a little bit, and the audiences are changing quite a bit. And so you have to be nimble to be able to create a career and create product that both of them like to have.
Longtime entertainment executive and professional team owner Peter Guber is with us, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. You mentioned the documentary. The Last Dance became absolutely must-watch TV. It became really the Super Bowl of documentaries. Did you have any sense that it was going to be this big?
Of course, that's my strategy, just make hits. Of course not. How could anybody possibly know? What you do is you try to find a theme or a subject matter or a team or a combination of players, try to create the venue, try to create the director or the writer, if it's a movie or television show, and you know, you hope that it moves from the page to the stage, whatever it is, from the drawing board of the coaches and general managers to the court or the baseball field. You always are in that transition of going from the idea to the conception of it and the realization of it. And so much happens in between. Fate and circumstance. I mean, you look at this, when this first happened, we hadn't finished the last two episodes. When you look at this, oh my God, we're screwed. We're not going to come out till the end of June near the playoffs. And there's no playoffs. Oh my God. It's a disaster. All that work, 3-4 years of work, 2-3 years of production. Oh, my God. Well, that problem turned out to be the opportunity because we had a wide open field to manage the show on, to be able to own, you know, 5 weeks in a row and own the national psyche. So you got to get a little lucky. I mean, you do. You have to get a little lucky with your baseball team, your basketball team, your football team, your movies, your television, with your shows. You got to get a little lucky. You got to have interesting subjects that happen. You've got to be able to have interesting people. And sometimes you think, oh, that person won't be so good, but they're fantastic. And you hope that if you're in the bat and you're swinging the bat, you'll get some hits. And that's what you aim for.
Peter, you're a part owner of the Warriors, and they had this incredible run where they went to the finals 5 years in a row. And they have, in the makeup of that team, all those characters you're talking about, whether it be Draymond Green, who almost seems like he'd be made for TV, and Steve Kerr, who's very smart, and Steph Curry's an icon, and Klay Thompson might be the best shooter ever. They elected, for whatever reason, not to allow cameras to follow them around. Are you disappointed that that's the way that went down?
Well, you know, with all my credentials, I couldn't get them done for me. So I can tell you that I think they were authentic in their view. I think really when you try to capture, there's two places to capture. You capture the event as it's actually happening. You chronicle the visuals as it's happening. And you have an intention on how it's all going to fit together. What is the narrative? What is the voice? What's the intention of the storyline? How does it end? You pretty much know that. Even though the script's not written, you know it because it's unfolding in front of you. When you do a documentary, generally, you're using enormous amount of existing footage. All kinds of existing footage from all kinds. You have to find a way to tell the story of the individual characters, weaving it back and forth, taking the actual live interviews that you shot and finding the way to utilize the footage that has existed to augment, supplant, suppress, add value to it. And it's really a matter of weaving the chemistry, whereas on a film, everything is shot. Virtually everything is shot. So with, you know, the Warriors, for example, you know, to follow them around and see what they were doing and just weave it together, there's no hindsight. This had 10, 15 years before we did this show.
Yeah.
You know, so hindsight gives you a reflective attitude, gives you a chance to give it a different perspective, and it'll give you a chance for the audience to, you know, think back on their own experience, bring their own experiences to it and point of view that they recall. So there's an advantage in a documentary to having, if you will, all the footage shot before and you bake the cake. And you add some narrative and add some interviews in to give it a contemporary value and a perspective. But at the end of the day, there are different kinds of enterprises. You know, I've done them both. I tried to get not only the basketball team, I tried to get my football team to do it, and they didn't want to do it. And I understood that. Different kind of show, though.
Dodgers part owner, Warriors part owner, Peter Guber is with us, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. I actually want to ask you about that. This is the home of the Los Angeles Lakers. This is Los Angeles is a Lakers town. It's also a Dodgers town. How do you square being a Warriors part owner with being a Dodgers part owner?
Listen, it's like, you know, Catholics celebrate all the holidays too. You know what I mean? You just got to be smart enough to recognize there's room for, you know, every kind of opportunity in every place if you weave it, if you put it together correctly. So for me, I established myself in this community by running the big companies, Columbia Pictures, Sony, a whole bunch of companies, Casablanca Records, over many years, and my authenticity was, I felt secure for me. You know, my feet, my tongue, my heart, and my wallet all went the same direction. I was an audience guy. So the fact that I have a team in San Francisco doesn't make me any less a Los Angeles guy or any less, you know, a person in sports in Los Angeles or in San Francisco. As a matter of fact, I would go to the games in San Francisco, the Dodger games, go sit down in my owner's box in the seats in the front that Larry Beer would give us, the owners there, right in the first row. And a couple of other partners in the Dodgers would walk down, and some fans, Dodger fans, and people would boo them and yell at them and throw things. And I remember the first time I did, I walked down and said, I'm going to be killed here being a Dodger guy. And we said, yeah, I hate the Dodgers, but I love you, Peter. The Warriors are great. So I had an immunity injection at both places.
That's the way to play it. Peter Guber with us. Okay, so I'm sure I'm not the first guy that's asked you this, but you've had such an eclectic career. You mentioned all the different things that you have done. If this is the old time capsule question, Peter, if I say you can put one thing in a time capsule that somebody's going to open in 150 years, and we have to explain to them this was Peter Guber 150 years ago, would it be one of your movies? Would it be something sports related? Would it be one of your books? You're a best-selling author. Would it be one of your speeches? You're known as a great speaker. What would you want to put in that time capsule if you could only put one thing as your legacy 150 years from now?
Well, that I'm a storyteller, and that I saw my life, all my teaching taught for almost 50 years at UCLA. I'm a regent, so I saw my life in storytelling words. And you guys are storytellers. You always look for people to tell stories, and you look for the story. You find the center. So when I learned, after many years of teaching and many years in the entertainment business, that the old adage, if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage. You know, that you better have a great script. You know, the actor can only be as good as the script. It can help the script. And the player can only be as good as the team and really as good as the coaching and as good as the organization. They all get up or down by it. So I believed and taught, and that's my legacy, that narrative is everything. The way we express ourselves in our businesses, in our lives, to our children, and to our communities, and to certainly to our sports team, is we tell the story. Look, you do it every day. You try to find, what's the story? What's the core story that will ignite somebody's passion and their interest? How do I frame the story? How do I tell the story? Who do I have on to tell the story? But at the end of the day, if the story's not good, you could have Methuselah on. It doesn't matter. The story's still got to be good. So the idea is, how do you tell that story? How do you find that story? How do you execute that story as a team, a sports team? You know, it's been my calling card in my teaching, in my speaking, in my writing, and certainly in all my businesses that I managed to be reasonably successful in. I find that if you don't have a good narrative to move your audience, whether it's your employees, your partners, your players, the community, the media, look, you don't want somebody on that can't even, it doesn't have a good story and doesn't tell it. Well,
yeah.
You know that. So the idea is, that's the secret sauce. That's the thing we have to coach. That's not digital. None of us are digital. None of us. None of us are zeros and ones. We're all oohs and ahs. And so, you know, that's the business element, the framing device that I use to decide what to make, what to involve myself in, how to deal with my talent. And that's been my core asset that has served me well.
So, Peter, let me tell you a story. This is a good one, okay? So, back in 2017, my beloved Los Angeles Dodgers were in the World Series against the Houston Astros. And it has come to light that the Astros just cheated their butts off in that World Series. All kinds of banging on trash cans. They knew what pitches were coming. And there was an investigation, and the results of the investigation were announced. And, in fact, they did cheat. As a Dodgers owner, how do you feel about that story?
Well, you know, the funny part of it is that, you know, you got to win, you got to lose, you got to win, you got to lose. Sometimes you win when you lose, sometimes you lose when you win. Sometimes you think it's going to be a hit and it's a flop. Sometimes it's going to be a flop, it's going to be a hit. And so I used to say the expression, wouldn't it be great if I could just make hits? But you can't. You get hits and flops. And fate and circumstance play on it. But when the movie comes out, what other competition was there, what happened, the actor who did such a great movie all of a sudden beats up his wife, you know, just before your movie comes out. I mean, you got all kinds of life experiences that help determine the success and failure of these endeavors. And so, you know, I look at it, you know, prophetically and say that you just have to deal with that. I mean, it's the only word. Just, you know, deal with it. Just deal with everything. Just deal with it. Just always say there must be another way. Try it again. Do it a different way. Work on it. You know. And the idea is recognize that success and failure are that close together. Inside every success is the seeds of abysmal failure. And every failure, just a little turn, is a great success. And if you can't handle failure, you ain't going to be successful.
Peter, this has been a pleasure for us. We really, really appreciate your time a lot. Your career is unbelievable. By the way, I think at some point you may have hired our really good friend Jeff Blake to work over at Sony.
Yeah, I did.
He's a fantastic guy and a huge fan of yours. He's a regular listener to the show, and we love Jeff, and his son is working at Saturday Night Live now. Hey, we couldn't be more thankful. Thank you so much for taking some time.
Have a beautiful day. Stay healthy and get out of the home.
Thank you, Peter.
Excellent.
Okay.
Be safe.
Bye.
There's Peter.
That was fun.
That was really cool. Yeah, Jeff emailed me. He hired Jeff over at Sony.
Launched
Jeff's legendary career. Yeah, Peter Guber, man, that is something.
He's had an extraordinary career. And the fact that he's involved with three different sports teams.
Yeah.
People always ask the question, if you could trade places with anybody, who'd you trade places with? He's on my list.
He'd be up there. He'd be up there. Boy, he did sidestep the question about the Dodgers and the Astros, didn't he?
Oh, no, did he? Wait a minute. So I think that the answer to that question is actually what he said. Maybe you didn't catch. We'll get into it next. In the top of the hour, Booger that was the Goober. Now we have the Booger coming up at the top of the hour.
We got you covered from Goober to Booger. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.